Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Sidebar Chats. Today, we're joined by Senior CISO Consultant Larry Kincaid to discuss social engineering, what it is, why it's so prevalent, and what companies can do to defend themselves from social engineering breaches. According to a recent report from cybersecurity company ZeroFox, social engineering remained one of the most frequently reported intrusion tactics in Q2, and this will almost certainly remain the case for the foreseeable future. Just last week, Uber suffered a major security breach as a result of social engineering, and they're not the only ones. Microsoft and Okta also suffered security breaches from social engineering earlier this year. So Larry, let's dive in. What is social engineering? How does it work, and why can it be difficult for companies to protect themselves from it?
Definitely. Yeah, I actually looked up the definition just to, level set. So social engineering is the use of deception to manipulate individuals into divulging confidential or personal information that may be used for fraudulent purposes. I liken social engineers to con artists. I mean, that's really what they are in today's day and age. Con artists have been around far, far before computers. But really, it's confidence. It's a sense of urgency. It's the ability to convince somebody that you are establishing, I guess, that reputation, that you are willing and trustworthy to get this information. And I think 99 times out of 100, it's credentials, username and password, in order to compromise systems. So that's what we look at when we say social engineering.
Got it. Thank you. So this is at the top of everyone's mind right now because of the recent Uber breach. So can you describe a little bit about that situation and how the hacker was able to gain access to sensitive information in that incident?
Of course. So there's a lot of information going around. Uber has recently disclosed that the credentials were purchased on the dark web. With that being said, I mean, at the end of the day, credentials were gotten somehow. And typically that is by social engineering. But the interesting thing that does align with what they've disclosed and what has been, I guess, expressed by the hacker is that MFA fatigue was used, which is a newer concept in which they essentially spammed the end user with MFA pushes from their system until they accepted. I've read that there's an element of reaching out to that individual and saying that if you want this to stop, you should just accept it. We're trusting something. Again, establishing that trust and that credibility and compromising their credentials and getting into the VPN. From there, they were able to pivot, find some plain text scripts with some other username passwords to other systems, namely an account management system in which they found, again, more credentials, and then were able to basically just pivot throughout the system into their Slack channel, in which they disclosed who they were and what they were doing. I think the MFA fatigue is interesting in that it's probably the first time that I at least have heard about it on this big of a scale. But there's also, like, I guess, a lot of other layers to this breach.
Got it. Thank you for that explanation. That was really helpful. So what can companies do to try and prevent social engineering?
So my gut tells me security training. And I know a lot of people roll their eyes at that. And I think that's part of security training in relation to culture as well. You've got to train employees. They've got to be aware. They've got to understand what they're looking at, what happens. And even if they do, I guess, click accept on the MFA or provide their credentials, there should be the wherewithal to maybe think about it later and go, you know what, maybe that wasn't such a good call. And then reach out to the security teams and say, hey, I let this happen. Again, no shame. Like, the real thing here that needs to happen is people just need to, even if it's after the fact, is understand what's going on and how they can be a part of your security culture. I would give someone so much credit if they were to do that, because it's not easy. I think there's actually a story with someone, a personal friend of mine, that admitted that they got their bank credentials stolen in a very similar way. And they're very savvy. They're very knowledgeable, just having an off day. So that's where security training and culture come into play. Phishing exercises, very easy to implement, very easy to do, and very effective in training users. Hey, we got you. If I can get you, then anybody can. It gives you a baseline for where you're at as an organization. I like to mix easy and hard just to, kind of keep things interesting as well. But I think the aspect I want to stress, especially on the phishing, and even again, like I kind of stressed on, reporting, self-reporting potential security breaches is no shame. Shaming is not the right play in any of these cases. And then I think that in addition to just, I think, more of the non-technical controls, there's always reevaluating technical controls, ensuring that MFA is enabled everywhere it can be, that you're using a password manager, using password generators instead of remembering your passwords to prevent password reuse. All these things layered on top of each other make that onion to protect your infrastructure and your network.
That was a really great analogy. Thank you. And you mentioned this a little bit, but let's talk about individuals for a moment. So we've talked about what organizations can do to prevent this from happening. What can an individual do to protect themselves or maybe the organization that they're working for from a social engineering breach?
Yeah, so I think traditionally, a security professional would say, lock down your social media, you know, don't put everything out there, protect your information, which is the first step. But I think in today's day and age, a lot of that information is out there anyways. So I think the best thing to do is be prepared to have those conversations with social engineers. Be aware that you could be socially like engineered tomorrow. It's instead of the preventative of limiting that information that's out there, just assume that they already have it and be prepared to detect it on the fly if I'm going to be using some security terms. You know, talking to your kids, your grandparents. I know grandparents are typically pretty susceptible. You know, it's really just being ready for it. And then also implementing your own controls. I know, I guess what I always say is MFA on your emails, because that's usually the base of any significant breach into your personal life, because then you can reset passwords from there. And then go from there and think about your financials. So banks, credit cards, and then just make sure everything is good to go. And then setting up alerts as well. So I have alerts set up on all my credit cards to say, if there's any kind of spend, send it to me, even over a penny, just because if I'm using it, I know. And then I can ask questions if something doesn't look right.
That's really good advice. Thank you. So I want to talk about that MFA a little bit more. It's a common misconception that MFA prevents social engineering breaches entirely, but as we just saw in the Uber breach, this was not the case. So why does MFA not entirely protect organizations from social engineering?
Great question. It does feel like in this case that MFA has failed, but I'd argue that it didn't. It gave an individual an opportunity to stop and think about the context and what's going on and why this would be happening. But the social engineer was dedicated and persistent, would be a great word here, in which they were able then to convince that end user that, yeah, let's go ahead and accept that. But MFA, again, you know, it's best practice to always put in. So.
Got it. So if an organization is hacked as a result of social engineering, what should their next steps be?
Yes. I think, as I kind of mentioned earlier about the shaming aspect, I think this is also an aspect of shaming Uber. That's not the right play here. Shaming any organization for any kind of breach at this point in time is just not beneficial to anyone or the industry at large, because you know, we're not sitting here trying to point fingers and laugh or make light of a situation. I'm sure their security team is having a tough time right now, and their PR team in addition to that. But what should happen is transparency across the board. Everybody can learn from this. Everybody can sit down and kind of think through their security programs. Are you susceptible to MFA fatigue? What would happen if someone's credentials were taken? Do you have plain text credentials out there? Those are all great things to ask yourself and reevaluate your programs. And anytime a breach like this happens, that's what needs to happen. I think how Uber responds will be defined as in this moment.
Thank you. That was a really great answer, again, with more great advice. So we've reached my last question for you today, Larry. Is there anything else on the topic of social engineering that you would like to add?
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of mentioned it before, but the evolution of social engineering in and of itself is fascinating. I'll drop Kevin Mitnick is a good name to look up as in regards to early social engineering. Frank Abernathy, you know, Catch Me If You Can is another one. But, you know, anything from the Nigerian prince to our boss requesting iTunes gift cards. It's evolved a lot. And I, you know, we laugh about it today, but it's just getting more and more savvy. And, you know, I think we just always need to be aware of it happening. And again, technical controls complement the security training and the security culture, but everything needs to be taken seriously. And that's why security awareness training, phishing exercises, and your overall security culture are paramount.
Thank you so much. That was a great answer. Well, Larry, that was my last question for you. So I just want to thank you for coming on and sharing your time and expertise with us. And to our audience, thank you so much for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing everyone next time on Sidebar Chats.
Thanks, Claire.